Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to CBI at 10. I am Liz Mosley, and I'm going to do my very best to get the best out of a really esteemed group of panelists who are joining us today in the continuation of this mini series about regions and nations. And I think I can speak for us all when I say, if I had a pound every time in my job at Tortoise I heard the phrase levelling up, I would not need to work at Tortoise anymore. So it's good to spend time thinking about what that might mean in practice, and particularly to talk to people who are living and breathing what it means to be in an organisation that is a material part of the culture, the society, the economy of a place, and the identity even of the people who live there. My first question, just to get us going, to Ahmed Goga. Hi, Ahmed, you're Director of Regional Policy and Clusters at the CBI, and I know you know everybody who's here with us today. In particular, this phrase has jumped out at me from the brief, which is placemaking. And it's not something I use, certainly don't hear it in the way you hear levelling up left, right and centre. Just tell us a bit more about what placemaking means. Why is it important for the CBI, and why is it a sort of material lever that people can lean into and make progress from?
I think, Liz, when we get into some of these conversations, we tend to bandy around lots of jargon, lots of economic terms, business terms as well. But I think placemaking is something that really connects with lots of people from wherever background they are. It's in essence, it's the emotion, it's the heartbeat, it's the whole culture of a location. What's it about? What makes it work? What are the things and assets that sit within that location? What are the things that businesses in those areas are doing? How can it be shaped to develop moving forward? What's the story behind the place? What's the opportunity for a place? What are the challenges that it faces? And how do we bring all of those different things together to really shape what that area can be about? The reason why it matters is because within the context of our Thriving Regions and Nations agenda, how a place presents itself, how a place projects itself, how a place describes itself, not just to people from outside, but also to its own communities, its own businesses, is going to be so important moving forward as we move beyond the headwinds we currently face within the economy and how we really power up local economies, regional economies, and help to really drive growth in the national economy as well.
Super interesting, Ahmed. Thank you. And as a recovering marketeer, I hear that storytelling point. I know I'm going to come and talk to Carl about it in a moment. And I'm genuinely interested in understanding how you can take something that feels quite ephemeral when you talk about it and turn it into something really meaningful in the sort of very, grassroots sense for people's lives. Heidi, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being here. Heidi Mottram is with us. She's Chief Executive of Northumbrian Water. The title, Heidi, of this session today is How Can Business Power Up Places? Just briefly explain how Northumbrian Water in your organisation, what placemaking means for you. Maybe try and turn some of those concepts that Ahmed has touched on into sort of practical examples. What does it feel like as a chief executive really driving a region as well as a business?
Thanks very much, and it's lovely to be here again. And I think from a water company's perspective, if you think about what we are, you know, we have an incredibly strong sense of place. The resource that we work with, the water that we abstract from the environment and then return it when you've used it and we've cleaned it, is very geographically centric. So water companies, you know, take, I think, a huge interest in the regions that they serve and probably act like almost like anchor institutions for others to gather around. And we can be real facilitators to that. And if I sort of give you an example that we've been using, and it's really seeming to make a difference, is using that kind of coordination, that facilitation, that sort of bringing everybody together. We decided to set ourselves a challenge just over 5 years ago to say, for every pound that we spent as a company, and we spend a lot of money, about £400 million a year investing and in operating in our regions, that 60 pence of that will be spent in the regions that we serve. And Northumbrian Water is a bit unusual. We actually serve three different areas. We serve the northeast, as our name suggests, but we have another operating area in Essex and another in Suffolk. So that takes quite a lot of coordination and working with a number of other partners. But we know that that makes a massive difference. And I can give you examples, perhaps as the session goes on, about businesses who we've helped accelerate and thrive and grow their business model as a result of working alongside us. So that's when you really can make a difference. And I think I just wanted to build on one thing, if it's okay, that Ahmed said about this sense of placemaking. One of the things that I'm involved in is the local LEP. I'm the vice chair of the LEP, and I was working on our strategic economic plan a number of years ago, looking at this from an academic study point of view. And there is a huge amount of evidence that regions and places that have a really strong sense of identity and understand what they are about and are coordinated outperform significantly. So there is definitely something in this placemaking idea that can make a difference for regions.
I was going to touch on education too, but maybe that's a good segue to come to Andy. Andy Williams, lovely to see you, Andy. Thank you so much for being here. Andy is Strategy Director of AstraZeneca, and the hub is in Cambridge of AstraZeneca, right? That's your part of the world. So, Andy, tell us a little bit, same question really, I asked Heidi, but in AstraZeneca world, just briefly explain, sort of, are you based in the Cambridge campus? Is that where you sort of live and operate?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, AstraZeneca has multiple sites in the UK. We're also open a big site in the northwest for our manufacturing plant. But the real story is about Cambridge, where a few years ago, we decided to go from about 500 people in the Cambridge area to about 4,500 over a period of about 4 or 5 years. And so we came to placemaking by necessity rather than desire, if you like, initially. There was two aspects to it, really. Is we wanted to come into the area because it had a strong sense of identity, a particular way of working, a particular way of operating, which we found really attractive. And yet it is a city of only 120,000 people. So we knew that if we just came in and landed another 4,000 people with a way of working which that came with us, then we'd actually wreck the local area that we were coming into. So we came with a do no harm attitude, that we'd have to come in quite carefully and make sure that we adopted and adapted ourselves to be more like Cambridge than before. That's one aspect for it. And then I guess selfishly, if we did wreck the area, and I'm thinking in terms of quality of life, sustainability, attractiveness of an area, then actually we wouldn't be able to recruit people into the area anyway. So quality of life is really important. And then, so the other aspect of which I wasn't expecting to have to do so much is those people coming into the area from other sites around the UK or just recruits had expectations which didn't just link to their science. It turns out they're residents as well. So they worry about things like housing, where's the local schools, how come the traffic's so bad all the time, all sorts of things which the normal people, which actually business people turn out to be anyway. So you gradually get yourself sucked into a much wider remit than just either a relocation or a recruitment, finding buildings. And if that becomes a more holistic view of how you're going to make sure you're successful in an ecosystem which is quite fragile and needs building and maintaining rather than just bleeding dry or sucking out of.
It's really fascinating, Andy. I'm really taken by that moment where, well, we decided that we were going to go from 500 to sort of 4,000 to 5,000, and then you sort of mentioned a 5-year-ish period of time. There is some iteration in what you've just described as well about the journey, which is we've got this business goal, I suppose. We've got a sense of what we want to do as an organisation and how that would work. And now we need to figure out how we can deliver this without, using your language, wrecking the local area. Where does the planning of that come? Because as an organisation, you know, you're a pharmaceutical company, you don't have that muscle memory for town planning and traffic and all those other things you mentioned. On how do you learn that stuff, or do you have to partner with people who can help you do it properly?
I think when you're doing it on behalf of an own organisation, it's very easy to contract those things in, and actually that's the easy bit. So if we have to do our own travel plan, we can bring in travel experts. It's very easy for an organisation. But frankly, it is a learned model. I'd say over the 5 years, you come in and you learn that. You start by getting connected to those local authorities, local councils. You work out where decisions are made. It's just like a big organisation. You work out where the decisions are made and you go and find them. We have the glory in Cambridge of having quite a rich governance framework. involving multiple authorities and multiple decision makers. So very quickly, it very quickly actually starts to feel like a large organization trying to figure it out and put it all together. And the important thing actually is not just to go, it is to listen. So I spend a lot of time actually talking to residents group, local residents associations, just going along to parish councils, listening to their concerns about us coming, and actually making sure you really understand what the community is you're going into, rather than just coming in and saying, here's our external consultant giving us a very high quality travel plan, go and implement it and everything will be all right. You already know from your local community that they will have concerns about your growth and how you're going to impact their lives. So it's kind of a two-way process, but no, there is no book. And actually, I'm hoping part of our Thriving Regions approach is going to be, how can we accelerate that? It's taken me 5 years to get to a point. I think I've been doing it quite well for a couple of years, although perhaps the local authorities might disagree with that. But it's taken me 5 years to get to a point of knowing roughly how our decisions are made. And of course, remember, really importantly, making sure that business is there to support the local authorities. Local businesses cannot be the decision makers for local authority decisions, but we can make sure they're doing them in an informed way, which takes into account business views and business understanding, but is not taking away the democratic process from those local authorities themselves.
Fascinating. And I want to come back in and talk to you about success measures. And I appreciate the sort of, not necessarily antagonistic, but there's a sort of balance of power, isn't there, in the decision making. But let's come to Carl. Carl Sizer, lovely to see you. Thanks for being here, Head of Regions at PwC. So you sit in a slightly different part of the ecosystem of what we're talking about. And your big thing is this storytelling point, which we've touched on. So there's Heidi with her water company, very much, and you know, physically with the product rooted in the ground upon which she is based, and Andy sort of flying in a huge expansion of a super advanced, innovative scientific organization. Where does the story come in? Surely there are more important things to worry about than the story.
So look, I think the story is important because it's the collaborative narrative that gets created that then the ecosystem, as Andy describes, can get in behind. And maybe let me bring that to life with an example for us. So we have 17 offices outside of London, roughly about 12,000 of our people are outside of London. Now, as we look at that, if I ask the question, where do you think our biggest office is outside of London? I suspect you wouldn't say Belfast, but it is actually Belfast that we have 3,000 people there. Now, why is that? Well, we have the 3,000 people there because the ecosystem that was created, which was us as local business wanting to create an environment, an opportunity, a bunch of skills and capabilities that could service the rest of the UK, together with a really active, engaging, willing to invest local government, and a really open and very high quality university in Queen's University. The bringing of those three together and us creating the narrative together with local government as to what do we actually want to build in that particular location gave a collective ambition, a collective goal that everyone wanted to get behind. And therefore, all of the sort of positive reinforcers actually got in behind achieving it. Now, it must be something, Andy, about 5 years, because actually, if we go back 5 years, we had about 400, 500 people, and we're now at 3,000 people. But it takes that length of time to build a narrative, to get the confidence. And you do sort of quite a number of small steps first, then the confidence comes and then people get in behind. And we did a brief economic study just looking at our impact there. And when we did the analysis, and you can cut it lots of different ways, but it was about £500 million a year impact on the Northern Ireland economy of that sort of level of growth. And that's not our direct impact, that's supply chain, that's all of the other people that help to service all of those activities. And that's what I mean, I think, a lot by placemaking. If you can build that, you can create it. The economic growth that can flow to the local region, the local community is huge.
So if I were to go and meet with people in Belfast, would they know that this story has been created, or would they talk about it in a different way? Where does it materialize? Where can I see it? Do I see it on a poster at a bus stop, or is it different than that?
I would say it depends on who you talk to. Right. If you talk to the local influencers, the local stakeholders, they would definitely see it. I mean, there's a new building there we've just moved into in the last year. That's just been sold. It's the largest and most expensive bit of real estate has suddenly been sold to Middle Eastern investors. And that's, again, another indication of, you know, foreign direct investment coming into a place off the back of a story of growth. So you talk to the local stakeholders, they would see it. The indirect might be, and like Andy, I've talked to people in the sort of housing world or the mortgage providers. They would say there's an interesting dimension now, because actually, do they have the housing stock to support now this group of young professionals and where they want to live in that environment? So you might not see it directly in that case, but you would see an indirect consequence of, I guess, improvement in housing and actually some of the challenges that come with it, because there isn't the housing that people maybe want.
Yes, if there's those proof points for the story, they sort of coalesce around one another and build over time, you know, making the story truer as you go. It's interesting. Ahmed, do you think in general that businesses do a good job of explaining what they do in a place?
I think it varies from location to location, business to business. We've got fantastic CBI members who are doing wonderful things in their localities, showing leadership in how those cities or towns or regions can evolve. But I think in general, I think it's even more important now than before for businesses to really set out what they're doing in their localities, how they're influencing and impacting in not just the job creation that Carl has described, for example, but also the wider impact on supply chain, and also more generally speaking about how you can collectively, as a group of businesses, really shift the way in which a location is seen and thought. As Carl just described, you know, the development of Belfast and the movement of the economy over the last 10 years or so has really attracted lots of foreign investment, and it's actually starting to become a hot market for investors to consider. And that's an example of how these multiplier effects can kick in. But it's good business practice as well, because a more successful economy, a more successful city, region, or region as a whole is going to drive more business opportunities, and also it's going to create more customers as well. So there's a real virtuous circle to this if we can get this right. And I think one of the things we need to really think about, which is the Thriving Regions and Nations Committee is really looking at, is how can we really create this opportunity in every part of the country, and how can really, as Andy said, share some of these good practice examples or show how it's been successfully done, but also how we can form long-term partnerships with metro mayors and other senior place leaders, so that it becomes a wider group of leaders from business, from the universities, from education, all working in the same direction to really take forward a powerful message about why this location is great for these issues or for these technologies, or what by coming here a business can really thrive from achieving as well.
Just listening to the way the guys are speaking, I think one of the really important messages here is that businesses don't need to do this on their own, and the power of partnerships. You were hearing the power of partnerships in what Andy and Carl were talking about there, and about how they've used the, if you like, the establishment or the way a particular area works, and they've all got not dissimilar, parts of that framework, but they can often work. And I know this from my experience from many moons ago when I used to run a railway company right the way across the north of England. They've all got the same sorts of things, but they operate in different ways. And if you understand that ecosystem and you're part of that establishment, then that partnership working, you know, is the real accelerator. So businesses don't need to be the thing that says, look at us, this is what we're doing. Other people will have that voice for you, and they'll be able to talk to people who are used to listening to that voice when they may not necessarily understand or hear the voice of the business. I was going to give you an example. It's not actually necessarily to do with a growth story, but with the cost of living crisis at the moment, it's perhaps something that would have a resonance for a lot of people. So, you know, clearly bills are an issue, and we work in partnership in the Northeast with an organisation called National Energy Action. And what we realised, of course, and they were an organisation set up to try to support people who were struggling with energy bills, fuel bills, that it's the same people. Okay, you know, and so when all those connections are already made, going in on the back of that and being able to have those conversations with people means you're already pushing at an open door. And, you know, we'd set ourselves a challenge to eradicate water poverty in our region, so we needed those connections, and because of those partnerships, you know, we've been able to move a lot faster than if we'd said, right, we have to communicate with all of the 3.5 million people of the Northeast from the get-go. You know, we use other people and local authorities and a whole range of people, charities who are already connected to people, who are trusted by people, and you can just go in on the back of that message. And it's the same when you're trying to settle in a business or grow a business. You can go in off the back of the momentum that other people already have.
It's a great example of something we've done a lot, even in our little business. Andy, did you want to come in?
Well, I was going to add to both those points, actually. So I think, Carl, perhaps then Cambridge is 5 years ahead of Northern Ireland, because that perhaps what I said wasn't quite clear. AstraZeneca came into an existing narrative. So there was already that narrative in Cambridge, and it was the attractiveness of that narrative that brought us in. And we amplified, and if you like, with the punctuation mark to the narrative that was already there. And since then, we've been building and growing that, but it was on a base that was already there. And perhaps the thing we need to think about in our thriving regions, thinking of our feet here, Ahmed, is how do we get that basic infrastructure in place so it's easier for organisations like PwC and AstraZeneca to come in to amplify things? Because that amplification works both for our own organisations and creates the momentum you need to move things forward. So to your point, Heidi, you're building on the backbone of things which already exists, rather than starting off from scratch, which takes a long, long time. Cambridge University has been around for 800 years. We cannot wait another 800 years before we sort out the levelling up activities that need to be done.
I'll just build on that one, if it's all right, Liz. Another example for me, and maybe at a different stage again, Andy, to sort of Northern Ireland and Cambridge, is Southampton. I was down there a few weeks ago now. And actually, if you go back to what's the base that they can build on there, they have got this fabulous port that has got, you know, deep water that can get a lot of access into a huge amount of volume coming through. They've got fantastic maritime capabilities and things that they can really sell out and export across the globe. And they've got fantastic defense capabilities because of BAE Systems down there and other things. Now, actually, if you can get the three different components there and say, right, that's the narrative for that region, let's get in behind it. The challenge is, how do you create the collective that can actually then deliver on it? There's the willing of all of the individual. The challenge is the collective in getting enough around it to start selling that story, that then you can get both public, private sector, and potentially international investment coming in to enable those businesses to grow. And I'd say they're again at a different stage, but to your point, Andy, what's the playbook to help that happen?
Yeah, and what we talked about in one of our committee meetings is economic geographies rather than geographical geographies. How do we ensure that the narrative can stretch across the areas which are required to be competitive at a global level, rather than being constrained within council or county council or historical geographical boundaries? And that's an interesting challenge we need to think about as well. I'm hoping these new regional directors that have been proposed through the Levelling Up White Paper might help join up some of the activities in a more effective way.
Absolutely. The things that you're talking about, they add up to something about the culture of your organisations, a cultural disposition to lean into partnerships, to Heidi's point, a disposition to engage with, you know, the Andy's embarrassment of riches in terms of local government's infrastructure in Cambridge. That those things don't always come naturally. They have to be learned, and there might be feel like there's an element of risk, particularly if you're going to be building something that is a visible and, dare I say it, political narrative for an area. Heidi, you have metro mayors in the areas where you're active. I'm saying metro mayors multiple. I think Jamie Driscoll must be one. I'm trying to think who the ones are.
And Houchin.
Oh, that's right. Yes, of course. How do you work with those people to sort of make progress on all these fronts? Because it's in everybody's interest. What do you think is difficult about that? What lessons have you learned? Just give people some tips about how to, if they have a metro mayor, how do you use that person to best effect?
Well, I think what we've learned as a country is that these metro mayors can be, you know, really powerful kind of beacons, if you like, of a whole load of activity, which, you know, I mean, I've been involved in regional development for many years in the roles that I've had, but these roles have really helped coalesce. And if you get a really strong leader, a good leader with a good agenda, then, you know, businesses, academia, you know, the whole establishment is building around them. And if you take, you know, Jamie, for example, in the north of Tyne, he's very passionate about net zero. We've been working together on creating a regional coalition called Northeast Net Zero, to get all of the businesses that have already made some start on this to help other businesses come along, help them learn what they can do on their journey. So, you know, his passion for that subject is something that's attracted, if you like, he sort of acted as a bit of a satellite sucking things in Teesside. We've worked with Ben on something which I'm just super proud has actually become a national initiative that started in our regions, which is a common underground asset map. You might not think that that this should be a problem, but actually creating a map of what's underground has been something that utilities and others have struggled with for absolute decades. And through partnership working and actually our innovation festival, which I'll give a shameless plug for, it's going to be between the 12th and 15th of July at Newcastle. I'd love you to get involved. We work on all sorts of things there, but this map came out of that, and Ben's taken a real interest and allowed us to accelerate by working in partnership with people in Teesside. So I think when they capture a region's interest, when they have a passion for something, then I think people, you know, that individual themselves can really start to create a sense of momentum in a way that sometimes perhaps the more established frameworks need to, you know, they can be good too, but I think Metro Mayors have definitely been an accelerator in moving things forward.
Andy, would you concur?
Well, Cambridge has a rich governance structures, which actually adds to the conversation. So in Cambridge, we also have a city deal. Now, the city deal has engaged business since it started in 2015. And again, Carl, it's taken about 5 years to get to the city deal to an extent where it actually aligns both the needs of the community and those of the business. Mm-hmm. I think at the combined authority level, which is our mayor, it's more complex because he's overlapping with some of his responsibilities. I think where they work well is when they generate, when we had the local industrial strategies, they worked well and they clearly defined what was required from a business perspective to be successful. And it was therefore relatively easy for businesses to align to those activities and to see where the local growth funding was going. Yeah. I think it has now got more complex with these more central pots of money, which are going to be bid for. And I don't think Heidi probably knows more about this from the LEP. I sit on the LEP as well for the area, but how we bid into those funds and how we make sure they remain aligned to what's needed from a strategic level is more complex. So I think from my perspective, I'm on the fence. From our local metro mayor for Cambridge, is just because of the complexity of it, I think it needs some simplification. And again, my hope is that the new directors coming in, looking on regional level, will help reduce that complexity, so that we can see the leadership shining through rather than being across purposes with each other.
That's great, Andy. Ahmed, these regional directors, let's just understand, what is that role? It's in the white paper.
Yeah, so essentially, they're going to be the essential part of the infrastructure that takes forward government's agenda around levelling up and what the white paper said. They'll act as the focal point for locations and places to interact with, and their job will be to knit the different parts of government together to try and help to bring forward the levelling up white paper ambitions. So business and other senior stakeholders will be absolutely critical partners for these regional directors to make this a reality as well.
Thanks, Ahmed. Carl, it wouldn't be a CBI webinar if we didn't talk about metrics. So let's talk about metrics for a bit. You've mentioned Belfast. I know that there are others that you look at, PwC. How do you know if you're Heidi, Andy, or anybody else on this journey? How do you measure your, I suppose it's your sort of local community, local economy impact? Do you have I know there's not a full playbook, but do you have a sort of playbook for that?
I think it's actually, one way you could say it could be easy, because there's some quite direct metrics you could go after around economic impact. And I talked about briefly the sort of study we've done around Belfast, and we're doing ones in some other areas. But actually, in a lot of ways, it's the more indirect piece that you want to really see, you know, and that is much harder to measure. We look a lot at social value now, and it's something that the government talks a lot now about in any sort of procurement of activity. And social value is much harder to measure, where you're looking at the influence of the work you are doing in a certain location and how it's fundamentally changing that the way that a location really works and how it improves. So it might be, for example, around the change in the diversity of the workforce that you have, the inclusion of the people that have a certain demographic status or socioeconomic status, how you're bringing through those people differently. the opportunities you're providing. Those are somewhat harder to measure, but there are a number of things there I think you can look at on top of an economic impact, a job creation impact, a wealth distribution impact. So there are ways of measuring it, but it does get harder the further down that spectrum you go.
Heidi, in your world, do you have some particular measures that you prefer to use at that indirect impact level?
Well, if I could maybe go for the direct one first, because I think we did some interesting work in partnerships, is going back to about 2016 with Northern Power Grid and Northern Gas Networks to see if we could work out what difference we made with our activities. And we're actually just renewing that at the moment, so I'd hope to give you an even better number if you ask me in a few months' time. But we were really pleased and surprised to find that we could prove that for every pound we spent, there was about another £8 of economic impact in the regions that we served. And that was way bigger than we thought it was going to be. And it was that kind of work that gave us this inspiration to say, well, okay, where is that £8 going to actually land? And we wanted it to make sure they absolutely landed in our regions, which is why we got in behind that and did the commitment to spend 60p in every pound. So I think you can do some really, really direct things. But Carl is also right, you know, the indirect, the sense of who we are and how we do things around here and what that means. And an example I was going to give you, it might be an unusual one because it's not necessarily a big businessy thing. But, you know, often the sense of place can come from the geography. And in the northeast, we have a rather spectacular reservoir that is famous, Kielder Reservoir. And you know, people love the idea that they have that reservoir and it's supporting the water services of the northeast. And so we've established a partnership with local authorities, with tourism boards, and we do a whole series of things around that reservoir, facilitating its, if you like, its infamy. So we were the first international dark sky in the UK and the biggest one in Europe still. And those things give a real sense of regional pride. You know, that's ours. It's amazing. This is why where we live is fantastic. And, you know, it really powers that confidence. So even though it might not sometimes seem like it's a real economic thing, it's something about this is a place I want to come and live. This is where, you know, both Andy and Carl said, this is a place I want to raise my children. I want them to go to school here. I want to go mountain biking up there. And we can do that because, you know, Kielder is there and that beautiful place is there. So I think that's a good example of how you can use an asset which might not seem like an economic asset, but it actually is.
Spent happy times up at Kielder Water myself. We're into the last 10 minutes, and if we've talked a bit about metrics, but again, the law is you must talk about skills if it's on a CBI session. Heidi, I'm interested to understand, if we talk about putting down roots, and we've touched on sort of social mobility and lifelong and those sorts of things, how do you work with the education establishment in your part of the world?
Well, one of the things that you know is typical of a water company is that the jobs that we have are high value jobs. So we've got a lot of engineering going on, which is probably the most obvious ones, but science in terms of water quality and how we are measuring water quality. So we've always had incredibly strong links with the universities that are in our region, and we're very lucky. We've got some incredible universities in Durham and Newcastle and Sunderland and Teesside, and you know that these are places where we can either be training people, you know, vocationally, or we can be really deep in research partnerships looking at our engineering and technologies and new ways of treating things. So I think for us that is absolutely and utterly essential. The same with further education, because many of the people who are going to perhaps do more apprentice or vocational type work, we're bringing those people through there. We did a leadership and management program with Northumbria University a number of years ago. So all of these universities support the different aspects of what we do and making sure that we are keeping high level, high quality jobs in our region that build. And what's been, I think, really very noticeable in higher education, further education, it's their raison d'etre, but in higher education particularly. And I was interested to hear Carl talk about Belfast. There's some brilliant universities in Belfast. I know that Cambridge is obviously somewhat of a standout, but you know, these universities, despite perhaps, if you like, being in the high clouds of academia, really get the difference that they're making to economies and to the way that they provide people with high skills in our country to do the work that we need to do.
I think just to add very briefly on that, Liz, I think I would agree completely with everything Heidi said. I think the universities now have also shifted to see and try and link much more closely the qualifications, the skills, to the needs and requirements. You know, for example, in Cardiff, where we work pretty closely with the university there, we've worked with them on a master's around ethical hacking, cyber ethical hacking. And that's to think about, you know, we want to build a bit of a cyber skills and capabilities hub in Cardiff. We've gone direct to Cardiff University. Cardiff Capital Region have come and gone, okay, that sounds like a great idea. We've got GCHQ around the corner. There's got to be an ecosystem there that gets created. We'll help support Cardiff University on that. PwC, you'll commit to taking 15 grads or whatever the number might be from that particular course. And that's sort of it all working together. But that's because the universities are working much more closely with business to get the skills that the business and the local community needs. So that, I think, is a bit of a shift that we've had over the last few years.
Fascinating. Andy, anything to add to that? There's a moderately famous university near you, I think.
Blimey, skills in less than 7 minutes. So let me, I'll blend the two previous questions before. So each job we create in Cambridge creates another 4 to 5 jobs, both in the Cambridge area, actually, but in the greater UK economy as well. So that's a good thing in itself. We work within something called the Science Industry Partnership. So Life Sciences has its own way of collating skill set needs. We develop new apprenticeship standards and we feed them into different universities, not necessarily always the big famous ones, but the other ones as well. We have 200 plus apprenticeships in AstraZeneca in the UK as well. To come back to the community side of it as well, when we came to Cambridge, we thought we'd try and focus our community activities around STEM. So encouraging more people from communities to come into STEM. And the big trick there is when you work for a big AstraZeneca company, generally speaking, our employees want to go to the sorts of schools which they go to or their children go to. They're exactly the schools you don't want to get to. The schools you want to get to are the ones which where children who don't have those opportunities. So we focus our activities on going out to the wider community. We work closely, for example, with Cambridge United on sporty science. There's nothing better than getting kids to come to see a footballer and then convincing them they want a career in science. So we spend a lot of our community activities trying to find those disadvantaged communities. Our success as a company, and actually getting 4,500 people into Cambridge, is itself a success. You know, it's diverse, it's innovative, but bringing people in from all those different communities is our, you know, that's, we get the buzz out of that from the innovation and the different backgrounds and the different ways of thinking that comes into our company are our benefit for that. But I'd say, you know, 95% of our community outreach is no direct benefit to an AstraZeneca. We don't expect anybody from our community outreach to come into AstraZeneca, but we know that enriching those going into STEM roles will benefit the UK economy. So there's a lot, like I say, skills in 2 minutes is tricky, but that's my best go at it.
Done a pretty good swing at it, Andy. Thanks so much. I've got a cheats question for our closing 5 minutes, and then I'm going to come to Ahmed just to wrap us up on the regional playbook. But perhaps we'll start with Carl. One key priority for you that the Thriving Regions Committee need to focus on. How can you help? What's your job going to be?
Well, I think we've talked a lot about the narrative and the framing of the narrative that is needed. But for me, I think there's a lot about skills. How do we work to get that narrative aligned with the skills? And as we look to invest in a region, what we want to be able to see is a longevity of supply. Yeah, that the region might be able to create demand in terms of the need for business, the need for opportunity, but we need longevity of supply. That will come through the skills agenda. And that's where I think we can get, if we can get the narrative of the cluster of the region lined up with the skills requirement, then that's where I think the priority needs to lie.
Then we're away. Brilliant. Heidi, one thing for the committee.
Okay, so I'm gonna bat for placemaking. I don't think you'd be surprised to hear me say that. But I have seen this work really, really well when there is this strong cohesion, when there are these partnerships, and when there's a sense of of belief, and everybody's batting for the same stuff. I mean, a great example was when we were able to land the International Advanced Manufacturing Park in Sunderland. Everybody in the Northeast was batting for that, irrespective of which local authority it was. And that was, you know, high quality investment coming in to support a whole region, because economic geography is the thing, not local authority geography. So when you can get behind these big initiatives that are really going to make a difference, then that's when you get some movement.
Brilliant. Thanks, Heidi. Andy, one thing?
I will still also back for placemaking as well, perhaps a different context. So you've got three big organisations here, you know, PwC, Northumbria Water, AstraZeneca. I imagine if we have businesses on this call who are a lot smaller, this is quite daunting to them. How do I contribute to placemaking? The other thing we have in Cambridge, which and I don't know about the other regions quite as much, is the strength of the business networks and the ability to contribute to placemaking. If you can't do it individually, at least feeding those things through your business networks. So what I'd like to see is how we can inspire businesses across the country to take more interest in placemaking, take the practical examples that we've got from myself, Heidi and Carl, but actually enable those medium and smaller businesses who are often frustrated, often know what needs to be done to be able to contribute. So we have CBI, but there are many other organisations and more locally based organisations I'd like to see understanding the value of place or being supported to be able to contribute to place in collaboration with their local authorities.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andy. So, Ahmed, we've got skills and placemaking. I'm going to let you pick one as well.
Well, I think knitting all of this together is the challenge of moving towards a net zero economy. And I think that has a huge opportunity to transform economies right across the country in a whole range of jobs and career pathways for young people as well, through decarbonisation, but also new technology that's going to transform other sectors as well. So I think that's going to be a really important way of bringing some of these things together and giving new definition to locations and communities as well.
So sounds like a good to-do list to me, net zero skills and placemaking. Ahmed, just very briefly before we close, we're into our last minute. You're soon launching the CBI regional playbook. Just that's going to bring all this together in one handy place. Just tell us a bit about what it is and when it's going to come.
So we're going to be really bringing all these elements together into a successful formula and ingredients to power up places. This will be part of our clusters development work. It will come through in a new digital platform that will be launched in a few weeks' time as part of a major round of regional events. And that will provide a focal point for businesses, CBI members and stakeholders and others to see where things are working really well, to identify examples of good practice, but also contribute to ideas and new ways in which places can reinvent themselves and develop that story that Carl's been talking about. And it'll be a resource point for all members as well to access new information and also understand where investors might be thinking about looking to locate as well. So a really exciting development. CBI members, keep an eye out on MyCBI and on other CBI platforms as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Something to look forward to. I want to say a big thank you to Andy, Carl and to Heidi and, of course, to Ahmed for their time today. I've really enjoyed the conversation. You're doing brilliant work. So whether you're watching us live or listening back, as I always say, go put the kettle on before you open your emails. Thanks so much. All the best. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks, Liz.